This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan is on vacation. Tomorrow on Science Friday, guest host Joe Palca takes a tour of the big questions facing the scientific community, from the origins of the universe to the extension of life, plus an update on the Deep Impact mission and what scientists may learn from the crushed comet. Right now, we return to London, where the death toll from this morning's terrorist attacks on the public transit system stands at 37. That's according to British police. More than 700 are injured. The blasts took place during rush hour on three crowded underground trains and a double-decker bus. The attacks threw downtown London into confusion, filling the hospitals and sending doctors into the streets to treat the wounded. They also disrupted the G8 meeting in Gleneagles, Scotland. Prime Minister Tony Blair left that meeting to return to London. He accused the attackers of trying to derail the meeting. For most of this hour, we talked about one of the main proposals the G8 must weigh in on this week, and a particular focus for Prime Minister Blair, a doubling of aid to Africa. President Bush, who was also attending the conference, drew a direct contrast between the goals of the conference and the perpetrators of the attacks in London.
You got people here who are working to alleviate poverty, to help rid the world of the pandemic of AIDS. They're working on ways to have a clean environment. And on the other hand, you got people killing innocent people. And the contrast couldn't be clearer between the intentions and the hearts of those of us who care deeply about human rights and human liberty, and those who kill.
President George Bush speaking this morning at the G8 summit in Scotland. With us now on the phone from London is Adam Stacey. He was on the train this morning that was attacked near the King's Cross station in London. He took a photo of the scene. You can find that photo on our website, npr.org. Adam is with us now. Thanks so much for being with us, Adam, after what has to have been an extraordinarily difficult day for you.
Yeah.
Hard to imagine. Maybe you can describe for us what happened on the train you were on this morning.
Yeah, well, it was just I was getting a train into work with my friends this morning, and it was particularly crowded today. Like, it was the most crowded I've actually seen the tube for a long time, and we're all kind of packed in there. And then it was between King's Cross station and the next station, and it was actually in the middle of the tunnel when suddenly was a loud bang and a train suddenly jolted to a stop. And obviously everyone was kind of panicking and screaming at this point. And we looked around, and suddenly smoke from the next carriage started just pouring into our carriage. And obviously you're going to expect the worst when you see that. Like, at first I thought maybe it would be some sort of chemical attack. And just like covered my mouth as quickly as I could. And everyone else around was just like covering their mouths to make sure they weren't like breathing in all the smoke.
So you did immediately, perhaps. It sounds like you immediately thought that it was a terrorist attack.
Well, yeah, the first impression is, yeah, because like everything that's been happening in the media of like the past couple of years, that when something, an incident happens like that, the first thing that just triggered in your mind is like, oh, it's going to be something serious.
How did you get out of the train? Was there panic or was it orderly?
There was, actually, luckily our carriage, it wasn't too bad. A few people were crying and praying, and obviously there's a lot of stress there. But eventually we waited for engineers to come and open the doors for us, which is after about half an hour, 45 minutes. But in some of the other carriages, we could hear people really kind of screaming and panicking, and they were smashing windows and climbing out and actually walking down the tracks, like in a tunnel.
Well, I imagine, I would guess that it would have to be extremely difficult to wait in a smoke-filled train car for 45 minutes. I'm surprised people didn't panic more.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just very lucky. I mean, me and my friend, we were trying to calm people down around us, and there were a few other people in the train who were just saying to everyone, listen, just, like, stay calm, just wait for someone to come and help us, and, you know, the help will be here, like, soon to come and, like, get us all out. And, you know, luckily, there wasn't, like, you know, a massive panic, because otherwise, in that kind of crowded situation, people could have got trampled to death.
Now, apparently, you took a photo which has made its way around the world on websites, including our own, NPR's website. Tell us about that picture and how that came about.
Well, to be honest, at a time, we didn't actually know there'd been a bomb explosion. So we were under the impression at the time it could have been some sort of electrical failure which had caused the train to stop. So, I mean, obviously with the smoke, we thought it was pretty serious. But then as we were getting out of the train, I thought, well, let's just get a photo of this just so we can show our friends that, you know, this is what happened. And then it was only later when I got into work that I saw on the news about, you know, the other attacks that had happened in London and the bombs that had gone off at other train stations and on the buses. I suddenly realised, like, how serious this was. And then so I decided to send that photo on to one of the newspapers.
Yeah.
And then about 10, 15 minutes, it was just everywhere, all over the press, all over, like, the main web pages of the news companies.
Even as you left the station, you did not understand how many people had been injured and how many deaths were involved.
You didn't see any victims
or anything like that at that time?
Didn't see any deaths, no. I mean, the only people we saw mainly were people in the carriage that we were with, and that was just one that was filled with smoke, and people were just, like, covered from, like, head to foot in just black smoke and dirt. And obviously, they're kind of crying and, you know, distressed. But we didn't actually see any deaths in our carriage, luckily.
You went to work. Did you get much work done today?
I didn't get any work done today.
Yeah, I can imagine. How was it getting home for you? I understand that the entire transit system was shut down.
Yeah, the whole of the London Underground was shut down. Buses stopped running in central London. I think even some of the taxis weren't operating as well. So I had to walk back from work.
And what's the move?
They arranged some, like, transport for some people to get back home from work if they required it, like, urgently to go back and see their families. But I decided to stay because I thought it would probably be safer to stay at work inside, like, a building.
What about this evening? Are people staying home tonight? I mean, can you tell what the atmosphere in the city is tonight? Or?
I imagine people just want to stay at home with their families tonight. I'm at home with some of my friends at the moment. We're just going to have a few drinks and just relax, I think, this evening and just kind of count ourselves lucky that things didn't, you know, things weren't worse for us.
Well, you deserve a rest.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for your time, Adam.
No problem.
Adam Stacey was on one of the trains that was attacked this morning in London, the train near King's Cross Station. You can see a photo that he took of the scene there at npr.org. We go now to Helen Rumbelow, a political correspondent for the Times of London, who is at her home now. Helen, we spoke with you yesterday under very different circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome back to our program.
Yeah.
You have been covering the attacks all day. Was there anything about today that surprised you once you had heard about the attacks, about the way people responded today?
Yes, well, this is something that was commented on not just by people I've met in the street, but also by, you know, the leaders of the police and the transport police, was just how remarkably calm people were. I mean, people often talk about it as kind of a cliche of this kind of blitz spirit of London. But it really showed today. I mean, there was a almost eerie sense of resignation and sort of getting on with life today. I mean, I think in some ways Londoners are kind of defiant in their stoicism, and that's what it felt like. It was surprising to me how quickly the city kind of absorbed such blasts. And And really, this evening, apart from the London Underground, it is almost back to normal in terms of the infrastructure.
Yeah. You were at the House of Commons today. What was going on Parliament Hill today?
The House of Commons was actually quite a key scene at one stage in the middle of the day, because it received the first official confirmation of the number of blasts. And that came from the Home Secretary, not the Prime Minister, who was, of course, in Gleneagles with the G8. Again, that sense of we must carry on to send a message of defiance to the attackers. And, you know, there's something perhaps slightly antiquated to outsiders about the proceedings of the House of Commons, but they did, after that statement, they did carry on with the rest of their normal business. So that was their kind of way of showing the attackers a sense of defiance. But meanwhile, Tony Blair did come down to London, but very briefly. Again, he was determined to carry on with the G8 conference, and he flew back this evening, and he'll remain there. There's some question tomorrow about whether there'll be some pressure to finish the G8 conference early. Mr. Blair has said that he will remain till the end of the G8, and he'll be there for the communiques at the end.
Yeah. I just want to remind our listeners that we are talking about today's attacks in London. And if you'd like to join the discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255. Helen, do you expect it to be business as usual tomorrow in London, or are things going to be closed down? What's the expectation? Helen?
From, you know, the head of the London Police and Transport, they've been asked repeatedly throughout the day, do you want people to stay home tomorrow? And repeatedly they've said, no, we want people to carry on as usual. We hope that all the transport will be basically running again as usual. So they haven't asked people to stay at home, but I expect a lot of people will stay at home despite that, because I think there's understandably quite a lot of nervousness now about travelling on public transport here, and just a sense today that people were kind of wanting to, you know, to get home to their families and so on. But I mean, in terms of politics, we expect tomorrow the pressure to intensify on Tony Blair about intelligence failures, because that seems to be one of the greatest causes of concern amongst opposition politicians here, that why, for instance, you know, the intelligence level was actually reduced in advance of these attacks. And that seems to be one of the kind of biggest issues, especially in advance of, there's a new piece of legislation going through Parliament in the next few months, which is a kind of anti-terrorism bill. But I think there'll be a lot of calls for that to be made even stronger in the wake of these attacks.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us today, Helen.
Okay,
Helen Rumbelow is a political correspondent for the Times of London, and she joined us from her home in London. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. As evening settles in over London, thoughts are already turning to tomorrow and how today's tragedy will affect daily life, commuting to work, shopping, banking, visiting with friends and family. To get a sense of what Londoners are anticipating tomorrow, we turn to Andrew Jack, a correspondent for the Financial Times, and he's with us from his home near London. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Andrew, what kind of a commute are you expecting into the office tomorrow? Everything was shut down today. The transit system, will it be open tomorrow?
Well, that's what they're saying. I mean, everyone has obviously been watching television, listening to the radio, and I think increasingly, including me, overnight and first thing in the morning, will be looking on the internet to see the latest news. I normally travel in by the underground service, and there's promise by the authorities that even late tonight or early tomorrow morning, there should be at least a partial resumption of services. But there's obviously a lot of uncertainty. We had reports this afternoon of an awful lot of people buying bicycles if they lived relatively centrally. And, of course, there are an enormous number of people walking to and fro central London, at least in the hope that suburban rail services would be operating normally, most of which were by this evening.
What about phones? The phone system? We understand cell phones were really out today. It was pretty hard to communicate. What's the situation now?
Yes, I had some problems with my cell phone, although normally with persistence you could get through. There were some suggestions earlier in the day that these explosions could have actually been triggered remotely by mobile phones, and certainly the cell operators were stressing the fact that emergency services would have priority. Clearly, there was a huge overload as people called their loved ones and their employers and rescheduled meetings. We're hoping that'll be back to normal. Certainly this evening, the networks seem quite reasonable.
And are people worried about more attacks? Are you just in conversations with people? Do they see this as, okay, it's over, at least for now, or are they worried about more tomorrow?
There's obviously a general level of concern, and I think inevitably after any of these sorts of attacks, you always think a bit first before you get back onto your normal bus or your train or your underground, particularly, of course, if you were, as I and others were, going through a number of the stations on the lines that were affected. But I think, you know, apart from obviously those who tragically were directly involved or witness to the explosions today, there's a sense to some degree of resignation that life goes on. And I must say, I got the impression really of a pretty orderly and calm group of people moving backwards and forwards and trying to get on with their lives.
Yes, and we'd like to take a call now, if you can stay on the line with us.
Sure.
Jay in San Francisco, California is calling. Hi, Jay, go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm a Londoner, born and raised in London, and I now live in San Francisco. And I have to say, I'm very proud of being a Londoner today. I'm both proud for the way the Londoners have responded to this event. And I'm also proud of the fact that London won the Olympics yesterday. It's just a pity we had the bad news so soon after we had really good news about London winning the Olympics.
All right, Jay, thanks so much for that call.
Thank you.
You know, and I have to say, Andrew, that that's a sentiment that we're hearing a lot of, that people were impressed by the way Londoners reacted today to this, that there was a calmness in the city and very little panic. People quite impressed by your city.
Yes, I mean, I think there was a lot of responsibility. Of course, for Londoners, these attacks aren't the first by any means. We did have a relative period of calm over the past few years. But, of course, many people like myself remember the period of the 1970s and the 1980s and the early 90s when the IRA was still very active. And while we didn't have quite the same brutal and anarchic attacks in London for a number of years, there were many periods when there were bomb scares. So people for a long time, I think, have been used to a higher level of security, always keeping their eyes out for unattended bags and so on, a long sense of responsibility. And I think it was impressive and remarkable the way that they adapted today.
All right, we're going to see if we can get one more call in here from Bob in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thanks for taking this call. You know, I certainly want to offer condolences to the people of London that were affected by this. And in a sense, we're all affected by this. The words offering condolences and sorrow just seem shallow and inadequate. But I just want to, you know, emphasize, you know, again, this is the nature of this cruel, ruthless, yet cowardly enemy we face in terror. And, you know, I'm just incensed that these acts continue, that the terrorists are just, you know, it's just beyond words. You know, that this G8 summit is gathered together to try and figure out peaceful solutions to global problems and gathered in the name of peace and economic development, and to see such a ruthless and cowardly act just infuriates me.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much for your call, Bob. And again, I think Bob echoes the sentiments of a lot of people. Andrew Jack, you've had two very extraordinary days there in London. You deserve a good night's sleep tonight, I think. Thank you very much for joining us.
No, and thank you for all your condolences. It's been very touching to hear so much from around the world, from friends and support.
Great. Thank you. Andrew Jack is a correspondent for the Financial Times. He joined us from his home near London. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Keep listening to NPR for further coverage of these attacks.